The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
If the opposition can't smell blood this year, we're as well pack it in, because even if Comerford's kickouts are as good as Cluxton's, every team is taking a step forward.
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
Friday Night Racing
on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie.
Right, you're very welcome along this Friday afternoon. If you're new to this gig, then don't worry. We stream every Friday afternoon on Off the Ball social channels. You can get us on Twitter, on Facebook and on YouTube. And then every Friday evening from 8 o'clock, it's Friday Night Racing on Off the Ball on News Talk. Johnny Ward, good afternoon to you. How are you?
Good afternoon, Jerp.
You're not here. You're not feeling great. You're a little bit under the weather.
Yeah, just some sort of a dicky tummy, to put it mildly, for the last few days. So, makes you appreciate your health, because I very rarely have anything wrong with me, and even a mild thing makes me go like hyper dramatic. So, yeah, just dialing in on the old Skype today.
The stereotypical Irish male, hypochondriac and a little bit sensitive whenever anything goes wrong.
Very much so, yeah. I got my vaccine yesterday, and I was actually a bit wimpish about just getting a needle into me as well. The vaccine's actually grand. I just don't feel great otherwise.
All right. If anybody wants to get in touch with us, you can leave a comment on the YouTube stream, or, of course, you can text the show on 53106. Now, during the week, Nace Racecourse launched a new partnership with the children's charity Barrettstown. It's in conjunction specifically with the Irish EBF Ballyhane Stakes Race Day, which takes place on Monday, the 2nd of August. So you've got a bit of time for this, but the best thing to do is to get involved straight away, because it's a fundraiser. Nace are asking everyone to donate a minimum of €5 to the Just Giving page. So it's justgiving.com/fundraising/racing for Barrettstown. But if you search Barrettstown on Just Giving and Racing for Barrettstown, you'll get it. Each individual donation means you get placed in a draw and assigned a horse in the €300,000 Irish EBF Ballyhane Stakes. And the person assigned to the winning horse will walk away with a €5,000 holiday voucher from Hannon Travel. Katie Walsh was helping Nace Racecourse and Barrettstown launch this week, and she's with us now. Katie, this is a really good cause. Good afternoon to you. How are you?
Yeah, hey lads, how's it going? Yeah, sure. Doing great, thank God. Really well. This is a great cause, and it's Barrettstown is only 15 minutes up the road from us here in Kill. It's up the back of Punchestown, between Punchestown and Ballymore, and the work that they do up there is absolutely phenomenal. It's a gorgeous place. I've never been there before. And Trinace Racecourse is only 5 minutes in the road as well. So it was nice to be able to get involved in something like this. It really is a fantastic cause.
Yeah, and it looks like they've lost about €1 million in fundraising over the last 18 months or so because of COVID. So this is a huge help if anybody can donate. Whereas we're saying it's as little as a fiver. And obviously you can give more if you want. Justgiving.com/fundraising/racing for Barrettstown is the details for that one. Katie, what's your own experience been like of the last 18 months? Everybody's experience has been very different. At least with racing going on and being on telly, you had a day job to go about as well as the other work that you do.
Yeah, to be honest, it didn't really change for us a whole lot, to be honest. The day-to-day running of it, I mean, you know, initially when Cheltenham, you know, back in 2000 and last year, 2020, when it was gone, when we came back and racing was called off, you know, everyone was a bit like, what's going on? You know, this is going to be hard for everyone to get going with businesses and staff and everything. But then as soon as everyone came together and we got racing back going, it was it's been non-stop ever since. For a lot of us, you know, our lives haven't really changed, but yet for some people, like, it's been or for a lot of people, it's been extremely difficult and extremely hard. And you know, you could just imagine the likes of places like Barrettstown. One of the ladies was up there and I was asking her, you know, how much money do you have to look for every year? And they have to find €6 million. And they're down €1 million already because of COVID and the impact of it. So, I mean, I was amazed as to how you'd even try and go about trying to find that sort of money. So, we were only slightly impacted, but when you hear something like that, I mean, that's just absolutely massive.
Yeah, and they do such incredible work. It's for very sick kids who are undergoing life-changing conditions, and I didn't realise that the €6 million is kind of the baseline that they need to cover every year. So there's a huge amount of work that goes into that. And then on the other side of that, obviously, there are people who are dealing with the families who are going through the trauma. So it's a difficult scenario, and I'm sure it's only made all the more stressful by the fact that money is tight.
Yeah, and you know, money has been tight, you know, for a lot of people since COVID kicked in, and it really has been. And you know, people have found it extremely difficult to make repayments in everything. So the fact that even for these guys to have to go about, to have to ask people to look for money for this, but it's only when you go up there and you see the work that they've done. I mean, it is only €5, and you buy a ticket and you have a chance of drawing a horse on a holiday. Like, who doesn't want a holiday if you do have the winning ticket and you do have one of those horses that cross the line in front? Obviously, the Irish EBF and Ballyhane have come together, and it's the biggest prize money that's in Nace Racecourse as well. So it's all. Sure, listen, it's good work, and it's very important. And I just think you need to go up there. And I know it's a great place; it does a lot of work, but there's a great vibe up there, and it's a happy place, and a great bunch of people. And I met one family up there, and you know, they've benefited from it unbelievably. I mean, obviously, as a mother, I hope it's a place that I will never have to go to with my kids, but to be able to go up there and help in any way, and I'm sure there's plenty of people would feel the exact same, that if you could give any bit of donation and help, it would it really does go a massive way.
Yeah, no, for sure. And we're only too happy to help people get behind that. So, and we'll give the details out a little bit later on, and we'll tweet the link as well. If you can just search, though, if you search for it, you'll be able to find it. What is the day today then for you guys at the moment?
Well, Ross is flat out. Ross has loads of horses in. He's busy away, and he's having a couple of winners as well, which is great. And I've come to the end of the breeze up season, so all the breezers are gone. And now it's a case of getting knuckling down here at home. Dad's got 14 or 15 in, so that keeps us busy as well for the summer. And Ross has the guts of 40 over there as well. So it's all about cycling through the horses as well, finding the right races for them. Like, it's so competitive here, but it's brilliant. It's great racing all year round, really. So it's busy. It's kept going, but it's absolutely fantastic. But between horses coming and going all the time, we're like everyone at the minute, between painting and power hosing out stables and tidying up the place, getting the grass cut and getting ready for the next season ahead. Because to be honest with you, it doesn't be long about coming around, you know. Galway's just around the corner as well, obviously, you know. So there's a lot to happen, but the weeks absolutely fly by.
What's the crack with the breeze ups? How does that work?
So the crack is, I go to the yearling sales when they come around, and this year it looks like all the yearling sales except for the Goffs sportsman sale will be held in Ireland. So every other yearling sale due to COVID will be held in England. So you'll have to travel to England, and I set out every year with, I wouldn't say definitely a certain budget, obviously, but I set out with kind of what types of horses I'd like to buy, and we'd run it here as a business, and go over and buy yearlings that I think potentially will turn out to be good and nice race horses. Not always the case, but that's such is life. And I go and I buy them, and then I bring them home and I break them and get them going, give them a little break over Christmas, and then the sales companies come back out. You nominate them for the breeze up sales, and then I generally set out to buy a nice individual, and then he'll kind of tell me, or she'll tell me as the time goes on, what sale they'll be ready for, whether it be an early sale or whether it be a later on sale in that season. And then I'll nominate them for the different sales, and then from there then they will be sold kind of March, April, May. That's the real busiest time. And they'll go to the breeze ups, where they'll have to breeze over 2 furlongs, which it has changed, you know. There's very small margins in it now, and it's very, very slight. It has been, but I suppose everything in life has just stepped up to be so professional, and I suppose it all comes down to that time, that slot that you're given to breeze over, to make sure everything goes right, to make sure he or she, that colt or filly, behaves themselves, and that they breeze nicely in a good style and a good fashion. And hopefully then that someone will come and like the pedigree and like the attitude of the horse, and hopefully go into the ring and buy them. Right. So that's the plan.
When you say you go for the individual, Katie, obviously, which is kind of like, it's an obvious point to make because everyone goes to the individual, but if you go there with a budget, which nearly everyone does as well, you have to, you know, have to have leeway for some things that maybe, you know, maybe it's a pedigree thing that you'll say, well, you know, I can only afford so much here. So what basis will you say I'm actually willing to forgive that? Is it all about like the individual in terms of just the physicality of the horse involved, or what's unique to you in terms of you're looking at that foal?
I wouldn't say it's probably, I mean, budget is a lot of it, Johnny, as well. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of us don't have the same budget as other people. So you go over with hopefully with the intention of buying something and hopefully making a profit on it, you know? And don't get me wrong, I've gone and I've given 15 and 20,000 and I've given 90,000, you know what I mean? Mm. Which is an awful lot of money, you know? And you know, I gave 90,000 for a territory's colt in France, and I brought him back to the breeders in France where he had pulled a muscle and he was sore, and I couldn't get him sold, so I brought him home. You know, so I mean, that's
do you have him now?
Plan. Yeah, I have him now. He ran an ace last weekend. He ran a cracker. He's going to go back and he's going to run in Deauville in early August. He won his maiden in Cork a couple of weeks ago. But like, I mean, that's the, we all do it.
That's your dad's horse, actually.
Pardon?
That's your dad's horse.
London Royal, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry. I actually backed him at an ace. Yeah, yeah. He's like lovely. Yeah, he was a lovely purchase.
Yeah, you know, he was. And I actually think a drop back to six is going to really suit him as well. But listen, the point I'm trying to make is that we all set out with a budget. And I think that people see, they read it in the headlines and different things that such and such is after making this and they're after making that. But there's a lot of losses involved. It's a way of life for a lot of people. It's a passion and it's a love. It's something that I absolutely love doing. And sometimes it works, but you're only ever really balancing out the books all the time to go back again, you know? So I've been lucky enough. I mean, there was this year, I sent a horse for a client. He came to me in November and we broke him and we got him going. He wasn't mine. He was bought at the December sale at Newmarket, showcasing colt, and he finished second yesterday in the good race in Newmarket, the July Cup. Martin Harley wrote him, showcasing called Asymmetric, you know, so he's a good look story. You know what I mean? He's 2 from 2 now, and he's after finishing second in the Group 2 yesterday, which is, you know, everyone would, I mean, that's what we're all trying to do, is to try and sell good horses along the way. And the Breezeups have sold so many good horses this year. It's unbelievable. It really is the place to go shopping. If you're in the market for a flat horse and you want to get into flat horses, you should be buying Breezeup horses. There is no doubt about that.
And if you spend 80 grand, like realistically, what do you need to make to be profitable?
Well, he made 150.
Mm.
Yeah. And, but then there's horses then that, that, you know, you can, that people have bought for 15 and 20 grand that you'll sell for 30 and 35 and 40. Any day you double your money is a good day. You know what I mean? So, and then there'll be horses that you'll struggle to get gone, and there'll be horses that you won't be able to sell. But that's the way the game goes. It's all about trying to get the horses moved on within the system, buying nice horses, as nice as you can afford, and hopefully with a bit of luck along the way that they tick the right boxes and that they're good enough.
And so if you go to a Breezeup and this horse that you've invested a lot of time and money in has pulled a muscle, what's that experience like? How frustrating is that?
Sure, it's very frustrating, but it's part and parcel of the game. You know, you just have to, I mean, you can't cry about it. You just have to suck it up and come home, bring them home. You know, I mean, that's part of life. I mean, I love this industry. You know, it's extremely hard and it's very frustrating. But at the end of the day, like, how many times, you know, for me, it's all about the Breezeup day and all about getting the horse right for that day to put his best foot forward. But that's no more like a trainer training a horse when he's there with a lot of owners to have him right the first day, the next day, Cheltenham, back to Punchestown. Like, that's unbelievable. Without doubt, the hardest gig within this industry is training horses. There is no doubt. Having to be answerable to owners all the time, having horses in peak condition all the time, hoping that they don't have a stone bruise, that the bloods are okay, that everything's in. Like, I'm looking at it for one day, but it's not training racehorses. Training racehorses is definitely, that's a different art, I think, altogether, to be honest with you.
Say if you go back to London Royal, right? So he is a half brother to Brentford Hope.
Yeah.
So you spend 90 grand on him. Now, as Ger says, you go to the Breeze Ups. It's a bit of a mess because obviously luck isn't in your favour. But then the horse, he's run three times. He's now rated 94, right? So it's kind of worked that you've ended up training him yourselves. So what position are you in now relative to what you were at the Breeze Ups before he's run?
Well, he's proved now he's a good horse. So he's proved now that hopefully someone might be interested in buying him. And he might go back to Deauville. He'd go to Deauville because he was bought in France, he's bought with the owner's premiums, which means there's another incentive, a huge incentive and a great incentive in France. So basically he's going to go back to Deauville and run in a listed race over 6 furlongs for 3-year-olds only on the 10th of August, I think it is. And that's the next step for him. And hopefully get him, you know, he'll be hopefully bang there. I felt in Nace the last day, he ran an absolute cracker and 7 was just a bit too far. His family would suggest it is quite fast. Richard Hughes thought Brentford Hope was crying out for a trip, but it turns out actually he's by Camelot. Mm. They thought he'd absolutely love a trip, but it looks like he's all speed as well. Now, Brentford Hope definitely wants a bit of soft ground, whereas London Royal definitely operates on a bit of nicer ground as well. So your options are open with him. You've got plenty of options with him because he's proved himself to be a good horse. But ultimately, what you're trying to do now is hopefully that someone will like him and pick up the phone and try and buy him.
I love that randomness of it, that, you know, you end up with the horse and now your dad's had to train him, you've had to plan him, you're planning to go back to France, and who knows where he'll end up essentially.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, who knows? I suppose the look of it, Johnny, is that he's a good horse, you know, and there's plenty of horses that this happens, that maybe the wheels fall off the wagon and it doesn't happen on the day and you have to bring them home. And that has to be done as well. And you just have to do the best you can and get going again and get them sold in a horse and training sale, run them, get them sold, move on. And it's all about getting the horses moved on so that you can go back with a budget to buy again when the sales come back around August, September, November. Because, and that's really what it's all about, is trading all the time.
So you essentially kept this horse not by accident, but because you couldn't get rid of him. And is there ever any temptation to say, ooh, this one's special, I might try and keep this one?
No, I don't think so, because you see, that's something you have to be aware of as well. When I got into Breeze Up horses, you know, I was very lucky that Dad used to do it before me, and it was something that we used to do, that Dad used to do as a business, and he used to do it with Willie Brown a lot. And then he got bigger at the training, and then as I was going on in my amateur career, you know, I decided, what was I going to do after this? Because obviously I couldn't ride as an amateur forever, even though I do see Liam Barkas down to ride in Sligo on Sunday. Yeah, Johnny, do you see that?
I did, yeah. It came in 7.
So I might make a comeback. Well, no, yes. You know, so I had to make a plan. What was I going to do next? Ross knew that he definitely wanted to train. I love helping out Ross with that scenario, and I love helping out Dad with his horses as well. So I have the best of both worlds. I definitely have the best of both worlds. I have it. Absolutely love it. And then I have the Breeze Up horses. So I made a decision that when I buy them as yearlings, they all go back to the sales regardless. They all go into a ring, and if you want to buy them, you can buy them. Okay. You can't decide to keep some and sell the others. You know, you have a reputation to uphold, and that has to be, people have to trust you, you know, that that you sell good
horses. The best ones. Okay. Enough, I never even thought of
lucky
that.
Lucky enough over right. The years. Yeah. You have to do that.
That makes sense. Sorry, I didn't even think of that. It's like, oh, she's keeping the best stuff for herself. So that makes perfect sense now that you explained that to us. It's interesting though that your dad had this as a part of his thing, and then got much more into the training. It kind of feels like training sucks you in, and the way you're talking about it is like, oh, this is definitely the hardest part of the whole industry, but like that means you've got endless respect for the people who do it, and it's right on your doorstep and it's in your blood and it's in your family. Are you definitely never going to be a trainer? Is that what you're saying?
No. I mean, I do. I have utmost respect for them because I've seen every side of it. You know, I've ridden. I do the raise up horses. I've worked in the yard every day. I've seen the highs, and thank God there's been loads of highs, plenty of highs, but I've seen the lows, and they're low. You know, horses getting injured, things not going right, owners disappointed, trainers disappointed, people upset. Now listen, we can all go and do something else. That's part and parcel of this game. You know what I mean? There's no one feeling sorry for anybody, but by God, as a jockey, you like it or like it not, people are looking to ride for, you know, as a jockey, you set out to be the best you can, to be the best, really. Everyone sets out, amateur, professional, flat, whatever it is, and they aspire to be the best that they can be. But at the end of the day, when you go out and you write something, you get the responsibility to write something, whatever it is, you get the opportunity, first of all, and then you have to decide, this is my opportunity now, I can't mess this up. So you go out and you write something in a bumper for Johnny Ward. Johnny Ward rings me and says, Katie, I have a horse that will run bumper and Cork on Friday. Will you? Yeah, Johnny, lovely. Loved it. Great. So I go down. Now, Johnny's after getting this horse fit and ready, and he thinks he has him ready for this day. He thinks this horse won't be far away. He's told his owners, everything's perfect. He loads him up, heads off to Cork. I jump in the car, go to Cork, walk the track, way out, get my instructions off Johnny. Next thing, everything goes wrong. Johnny has the horse there and 100% to order. I go out and I give him a very bad ride. Terrible. And I finish mid-div. Johnny's disappointed. The owners are disappointed. I come back in, take the saddle off and say, listen, Johnny, sorry about that. It just didn't work out. I was in the wrong place and I got shuffled back out of it and all the rest of it. I go home, I have my shower and it's on to the next day. Now, Johnny has to now speak to his owners, speak to himself, go down, watch the horse, just to deal with that whole disappointment of what he thought. Just to go, and that happens 8 times out of 10. That happens an awful lot, that it doesn't. Whereas I jump in my car and I go home, someone rings me, well, how'd you get on? I rode one there for Johnny and it just didn't work out. But sure, listen, that's the way it goes.
Yeah, I think as well with training, that's the point. Like, I think you're completely right. I can never really get around how trainers can put up with the disappointments and the constant disappointments, because it's not only that the horse ran badly, but this is a horse that you could have a syndicate, right? So the syndicate are in a WhatsApp group with the trainer. The syndicate's now had 3 or 4 sort of moderate runs in a row where you're coming up with excuses that may or may not be legitimate, but you're like, these lads probably think I'm an idiot now at this stage. And there's also the fact that it doesn't pay very well. And then you'll have, like, say, you might get aspergillus in the yard, or you might get a bug in the yard. That could be the horse is wiped out for months. There's nothing you can do about that. Situation last year, we have to get your owner to pay for horses in training, even though there was no race for 3 months, and we didn't even know at one point where it was going to return. And at all times, you have to kind of keep your head up and be able to get up in the morning and go on again.
Yeah, listen, and as I say, there's no one looking for a hug, but I'm just saying that there's a lot of those scenarios. And then there's horses getting injuries, whether it might be getting a tear in a tendon, or, you know, split a pastern and they have to stand in for a long time. You have to break that news. You're disappointed. You think he's a lovely horse. You have him ready. And literally that can happen any time in any day. You know, so it's just the disappointments that I have seen over the years. And even I've seen it here at home in Kill my whole life. Now, I've seen some absolutely great days as well, obviously. But I've seen just the... Now, would I rather do anything else? No. Like, I do feel like I train horses because I'm here with Dad and I'm here with Ross, and I feel the brunt of it every day. We talk about it every day. It's what we do. But, you know, sometimes there's, what's the saying? Too many chiefs and not enough Indians, you know? So I'm quite happy to be the Indian, to be honest with you. Between Dad training and Ross, there's definitely no need for another license, without doubt.
That's more cowboys and Indians, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
But just sure like say Ross is.
No, there's no cowboys down here, Johnny. I haven't seen you in around the place. So there's no cowboys down here.
On that note, but so Ross is starting off, and your dad, like, he's not, he's could have many years left, but he's obviously at the veteran stage of training. It must be interesting then to have that kind of, you're bang in the middle of your dad having had so many good horses down there, and Ross is trying to make his own, you know, niche as well.
Oh, yeah, sure. There's great crack, and there's great, you know, I suppose the younger people bring in another side to it, and maybe something that the older people haven't seen either. And then dad will say, God, I remember back in the day there was such and such. We used to do this or we used to do that. And, you know, that would be if I had him. You know, they're bounce stuff. You know, trainers, national hunt trainers will bounce a lot of things off each other. I find that they'll, you know, national hunt trainers really, really, they love going and seeing everyone's, you know, like trainers love to go down and have a look at William Mullins's place and look at the yard and stand back and admire all the good horses and the gallops and the facilities. And, you know, and other trainers will love going and have a, you know, there's a real respect there. There's never a jealousy. There's always a kind of like fair play to him. That was brilliant. Or he's building another barn. You know, he got a horse sold or whatever it is. All that money, I don't mean all that money, but any money, it just goes back in. You know what I mean? To maybe setting up a syndicate or buying a few horses or putting in the walk or putting in another lundering or maybe make an extension to a gallop or put it into easy fix fences or hurdles or schooling strip. You know, so there's loads of, and everyone just has a, because it's so small in Ireland, like I even was down the field here 3 weeks ago and the Doyles were on their way to the Derby sale and they called in on the way up to have a look at Ross's place. You know, there's a, you know, just to see the horses and see the gallop and see the facilities and see what Ross does. And I often see Ross could head off in the car and I could ring him and say, where are you? And he go, oh, I just called down here to Aidan Fitzgerald or called down to Scobie to have a look at his place. Or yeah. I went to, you know, like, you know, there's a real kind of like everyone's trying to really help each other along as into what would you do if you had this or, you know, this is after happening to me, you know, so there's a real kind of a,
why do you think that is, Katie? Because like you're, I mean, you are all, or certainly the trainers are all ultimately competing against each other. Why do they help each other? Why does the industry work for them that way?
I think because they know how hard it is. And it's not that anyone is trying to have one up on someone else. It's just because they're all kind of, a lot of that generation, like Ross's generation, Peter Fahey, Scobie, you know, Aidan Fitzgerald, sorry, you know, they're all around the same age and they're all trying to do the same thing, you know, and they all work hard and there's a general mutual respect. Listen, there's some people who are better than other people at doing it, but that's life. I mean, that goes on in, that's every day of the week. You know what I mean? There's someone better at packing the shelves in Tesco than there is near the fella packing aisle six. You know what I mean? That's just the way that it is, you know, but there is a general respect. I think everyone loves to see, I think racing people love to see other, well, I liked it. I would like to think that racing people love to see other racing people do well. And I think you could really see that in Cheltenham this year. I thought the atmosphere, from no crowds to see the winners, to see the stable staff stand over the far side and roar every single Irish horse and English horse. There was English jockeys texting the Irish to say thanks so much for the response for the Irish stable staff. Like that just... I don't know. That speaks for itself, I think.
What was it like over there, Katie, actually? Because, like, obviously, with the Irish bloodbath, as it were, in terms of winners, I heard that, like, you know, the Irish were very much cheering in the British winners by the end of the week.
Oh. We've got a frozen line there. Yeah, that are so shocked at the notion that the Irish were cheering the British home.
Yeah. Like, certainly, well, not in the Euros anyway, but it would seem.
Our guest this week is Katie Walsh. You're watching Friday Night Racing or you're listening to us on the radio. You can visit hri.ie or you can follow on social at HRI Racing. The hashtag is Every Racing Moment, and Friday Night Racing is of course brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. We'll try and get Katie Walsh back. Johnny, pardon my ignorance, but is Ross a National Hunt exclusive trainer?
No. He's Ross could be like, I'd have to look at the figures here. Ross has plenty of flat horses, and you know, the it kind of, when she was on about the territories horse, it didn't come immediately to mind. But that I was thinking, well, Ross must be trained that, because obviously Ted wouldn't have many flat horses, and I definitely wondering if Ted has ever had a horse run in a stakes race in France before, as will be the case with London Royal. But yeah, I think a lot of trainers now, Ger, like they do try to mix it up, because it's not, you know, it's not necessarily the most profitable business. And National Hunt racing is, at one level, it's extremely competitive, but the breakdown of horses is definitely an issue, because you have to be very patient. Injuries are just so commonplace that with the flat, with Dundalk now making it essentially an all-year-round thing, it's much more, like, owners more want to get into flat horses than jumps horses in Ireland now, by and large, even though we've this reputation as being like a jumps-loving nation.
Yeah, and I guess it's about the calendar as much as anything. If you want an all-year operation, then you need to be dual purpose.
Yeah, like, and it is as you say, calendar, and it's also like it makes economic sense, I think. You know, you've asked trainers lots, what's the difference between the two, and they'll tell you there isn't actually that much.
In terms of just get the horse fit, it's the same instinct guides the trainer, it seems, on both parts, and then it's finding the right race. The science is actually finding the right path for the horse to be in the best company for that horse, as in company it can beat.
Yeah, and exactly, like, there's some, like, I think race planning is massively important. I think horsemen and horsewomen who are absolute geniuses at looking at the gallops will let themselves down by putting horses in the wrong races. But, like, I think what intrigues me is, I suppose, the schooling technique of Henry de Bromhead would be different to the schooling technique of Willie Mullins, who by and large doesn't school the horses as much, whereas Henry de Bromhead does that loose schooling where they're basically blindfolded and they just know, they love it, they know how to do it, that's why they jump, they have a style of racing handily. But at the same
Oh, great. Try again there, Johnny. The gremlins are in the system today.
I'm gone as well, am I?
No, you're back now. Don't worry.
Yeah, I was making a very good point there, obviously, about Henry. So Henry de Bromhead will train his horses to jump, you know, in the loose school and inside the ring. Willie Mullins might school them differently. Like, so you will have your nuances in terms of your jumps trainers. They'll have different gallops. Some of them will gallop over a lot further. Some of them will gallop over shorter, depending on the facilities at their disposal. But ultimately, if the horse isn't fit, he or she isn't going to win.
Yeah, okay. We'll get Kelly Watts back in just a moment. Actually, I think we can... Yeah. No, one more minute. I'll tell you about what's going on in our competition. You have a horse in action this weekend at Newmarket. So this is our toe to 10 to follow. Tom Malone's Snow Lantern is duking it out today with Johnny's Pretty Gorgeous. This is at Newmarket. A win for Johnny won't be enough to bridge the 140-point gap between himself and Tom. It'll obviously help. More importantly, the 40-point gap to me. Visit Tote.ie to receive a 10% boost on all Irish and UK racing dividends with Tote Plus. Tom Malone is romping home in that race. So I think we've re-established contact now with Katie Walsh. Katie, there was one thing about the breeze ups that I'm always really interested in. It's 2 furlongs on the day when you actually get to show everybody the speed and quality of the horse. What if your horse is like a longer distance? How do you kind of show up? How do they make sure that you're in the right company for that? And do you get to pick? How does that work?
No, you don't get to pick. So it's a standard 2 furlongs for everyone. But I suppose what happens is you'd like to think that the pedigree should match the horse, you know. So if you're after buying an animal that looks like a sprinter, that has the pedigree to be a sprinter, and if he doesn't come up there in good style, and if he doesn't look fast, it's going to be hard for you to get him sold. You know what I mean? Because people are going to say, you know, he really is bred. He looks like he should be running maybe in 2 or 3 weeks' time. He doesn't have the size or the scope, and his pedigree doesn't suggest that he's going to be a 3-year-old, really. You know, he looks like now is his time, and it looks like he didn't do a good enough freeze to do that. You're kind of on the back foot, you know? So you'd like to think that if you have a bigger, scopier type of an animal, and if he does a lovely, stylish, nice, balanced breeze, that people... I think that everyone, you should stand there and look at it. You know, like, if you don't like what you see, well, then regardless of what's on the page, you're not going to like it, if you know what I mean. You shouldn't like it because someone else tells you that that's what you should be buying. You know, like, if you liked it and you thought it came up there nicely with good action and good style, and then say, what was that? That caught my eye.
Right.
And then go from there. And then... when you look at the book then and go, God, you know, he's a, you know, a Ballardo colt out of such and such, you know, he looks like this, looks to me like this horse might want maybe 7 or a mile. He might progress up into maybe a mile, you know, a more of a staying type. And then you see him in the physical afterwards and you go, yeah, fine big scoping horse, you know? And that's kind of what people, a lot of people will do. They'll look at the breeze up to see
No, that line's gone. That's unfortunate. I'm really fascinated by that part of it, Johnny. The difference between, so say you do have a horse that's going to be a mile and a half eventually, and there's a lot of sprinters in that particular breeze up, and yours is like lagging behind. Do you know, it's
yeah, like,
I guess
you're
the
not
point, you're, the point that Katie makes is that it has to like look, has to look the part.
Yeah, like you're obviously going below to breeze a horse unless he or she, you know, can do well. And like we spoke to Johnny Murta about this, you know, in terms of, we spoke to other trainers as well, that if you have these sort of, like Joseph O'Brien has kind of gone off the idea of buying sharp 2-year-olds because like they have a ceiling, a shelf life. So, you know, Johnny Murta is probably now falling on horses that become 3-year-olds and 4-year-olds. So they're not your typical breeze horse, but they do require more time, and precocity is still very popular.
Well, naturally enough, it's funny how that whole aspect of the business is something that like we're obviously talking about as often as we can on the show, because it's really fascinating how you're sitting there and knowing how the horse arrives to be in this race is very important when it comes to assessing the horse's chances, and just even like which trainers are buying horses that take a while to rise to their peak.
Yeah, and every year as well, you get a, you know, this batch of new stallions, like the new kids in school when you have the first years every year. And some years there'll be an awful lot of anticipation about particular stallions, but you know, it doesn't take long at all for them to fall out of fashion. And people forget that Galileo, Jim Bulger invested in Galileo at a time when his stallion fee had actually dropped from 50 grand to 37. And like all of the way down along from that now, Jim Bulger has this like from New Approach to Teofilo right down to his classic winner this year. He's all these horses because he invested in Galileo. And obviously Galileo became one of the best stallions of all time, but that didn't look to be the case initially. And, you know, you can, if you're in the breeze ups, then you might want to invest in a stallion that's gone out of fashion because he's, you know, his stock is affordable.
Well, you zig while everybody else zags. It's not,
yeah, that's
not
how
quite money ball,
make
but
money in stocks.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Exactly. Friday Night Racing is brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Unfortunately, we're not going to be able to re-establish the line to Katie Walsh there, but a reminder, of course, that Katie was with us today to try and help get you guys to spend a bit of money and help Barrettstown in particular. There's a brilliant initiative that's going to, the result we'll know on the 2nd of August on Monday, which is the day of the Irish EBF Ballyhane Stakes. So essentially, it's a raffle. You spend a fiver, you get a ticket, and if you're assigned to the correct horse in the €300,000 Irish EBF Ballyhane Stakes, then you could walk away with a €5,000 holiday voucher from Hannon Travel. But the best part about this, from everybody's perspective, is that you're really helping Barrettstown, which are crying out for some much needed funding in the wake of COVID, where it looks like they've lost almost £1 million in fundraising revenue. So a reminder, of course, the mission of Barrettstown is to rebuild the lives of children affected by serious illness and their families through life-changing therapeutic recreation programs in a safe, fun and supportive environment. Let's talk about the week that racing had. I know you were on the news round with the lads last night talking a bit about this. The IHRB was before the Oireachtas Committee. They're going to have to go back again because of COVID restrictions, meaning that the session could only be 2 hours. So, on balance, this was always going to be a difficult enough day because it's very hard to know what the members of the committee are actually trying to achieve. Some of them are there to grandstand, some of them are there fighting for the truth, and some of them are there to protect their own constituency interests. Mm. Very interesting to see the geographic lines on which the questions were coming from. I thought that was, it's always an interesting subtext. All politics is local when it
comes
to
Irish politics.
Yeah. So what happened, and what do you make of what happened?
Well, first of all, the 2 hour thing is like, it's obviously COVID related, but it's really inhibiting. So like the 2 hours were like they were done before. You know, I think Jackie Cahill, the chair, had, I don't think he was even halfway towards getting the answers that he wanted.
Can I just interrupt you, right?
Sure.
In what civilization can you not have a meeting finished in 2 hours? How stupid do you have to be to not be able to organize things to go, here are the questions, this is your time to answer them. I'm not going to have you all grandstand for 15 minutes with your time and then ask, oh, by the way, at the end, here's my question. Like honestly, this is the organization who's running the country. You can get a lot of work done in 2 hours. Sorry, rant over.
Well, if we remember, like, you know, you go back to the FAI Iraq's committee of 2019, that famous one, you know, if that was probably the first day. I may have watched a couple of them. They don't function very well. And in fairness, Jackie Cahill, you're completely right. The chair should be a lot harsher, because like one senator or one TD, he might literally talk about 10 minutes without asking anything. And then he'll have a list of 7 questions sort of mingled in, which aren't going to be answered, obviously.
No.
And it's not, I thought, well, to be fair, yeah, I thought it should essentially be, none of this like, welcome, delighted to have you here. None of this crap. Here's my question. That question is for you. You answer that question. And I thought Dennis Egan and then Hillier, who's basically, you know, she was primarily dealing with the drug situation from the IHRB. I thought they were very polite, but they didn't grandstand and they didn't kind of beat about the bush. They answered as well as they could. Brian Kavanagh had an initial kind of, you know, so Brian Kavanagh and Dennis Egan had pre-prepared little speeches, but brief at the top. But Brian Kavanagh wasn't really involved after that because it was too short. Like the 2 hours just absolutely flew by. You'd Senator Ronan Mullen and Michael Ring having a spat over, it was almost like the bookmaker seniority at the Curragh, like, I'm here before you. And Michael Ring had his kind of metaphorical hand up, you know, the hand on Zoom now that you can put up to get in play. Apparently he had it up for like an hour and a half, but Senator Mullen came in because of some other, I don't know. So you had all this nonsense as well. Then you had the Zoom was breaking down a few times and Lynn Hilliard was basically gone blank. But all in all, I thought the IHRB did quite well. There are a lot of unsubstantiated allegations. I think the main thing was that, you know, Paul Kimmage had an article last Sunday, this on the Indo, about 6 horses who a trainer had purportedly gotten from Irish trainers, 3 of whom had shown signs that they had taken drugs, and effectively the BHA and the IHRB proved that this was not the case. I think that was one of the important things, and Lynn Hilliard was quite strong on that. So I thought Dennis Egan,
they proved this was not the case, what do you mean?
So they went to the lab in Newmarket. They did all the tests. They did as thorough tests as is possible. There were, by all accounts, they're a world-class lab. Absolutely not. So what was claimed in the piece or by the trainer, and I'm not, this isn't to do with Paul Kimmage, this is to do with just the suggestion of the trainer that he got a toxicologist report that suggested this. According to the IHRB's lab, this is not the case. These horses were not drugged, and that was the end of story as far as they were concerned. I'm not an expert on drugs, but I have no reason not to believe him.
Okay. There's probably questions around that though, like why was the trainer making this claim in the first place? I think for stories like that, it's very interesting to see what the official response is, and I think it behooves us all to question those official responses until we see publication. You know, it did seem like this is definitely an organization who are putting people forward now for stuff like this, who are happy to come out and give as much detail as possible. The other thing that was good that I thought, just doubtful at the moment still on some of the stuff, but
yeah,
at least you have, in this, you have an opportunity for the rumours that are out there, and I'm not going to repeat any of them, and I would ask you not to do the same, because they said, no, we haven't had any injunctions, we have had no cover-ups as well. That stuff's now on the record of the Dáil, and that's important. Because it means that if anything subsequently emerges, there is people who have said and staked their reputations on it that that's not the case. So we need people to stake their reputations, because that's the bit where everybody goes, okay, well, we either decide not to take you at your word, or we take you at your word and we can begin to build some semblance of trust. And I thought that was one of the good things to come out from what I've read today. I didn't actually see it yesterday.
Yeah, I watched from start to finish. In fairness, I think the IHRB, which was the turf club, it's been an anachronistic organisation. It has been something of a gentleman's club. I think, you know, not enough women probably involved. It's good to see Dr. Lynn Hillier involved, who, you know, impressed everyone, I think, yesterday. You know, it's primarily funded effectively by taxpayers' money. It should absolutely be answerable to the HRI. It should be brought forward to meetings like this. And I think, you know, Dennis Egan is taking early retirement for whatever reason. I don't really know why. He may just have had, you know, he's had enough of it at this stage, and he's getting, you know, he's getting to go off into the sunset maybe at 60 instead of being worn out at 65 or whatever. But he's putting Niall Cronin forward as kind of you know, the go-to person for the media. They, you know, the IHRB didn't even have a Twitter account up until not that long ago, so it's been really kicked into the modern era, kicking and screaming. And whoever replaces Dennis Egan, I hope, will be more outward looking in that regard.
Okay, Johnny, we've got to leave it there. Anything else about the weekend you want to tell us?
It should be pointed out that Snow Lantern just won at Newmarket, so that's good for Tom Malone, obviously. In terms of the weekend, good race in the July Cup tomorrow. Four race meetings in Ireland, not a lot going on, and we're obviously still hopeful of getting a crowd for Galway.
All right, good stuff, Johnny. We'll talk more next week. Following that race on Off the Ball is brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie. We'll see you next week.
Friday Night Racing
on Off the Ball,
brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie.